It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Department of Veterans Affairs serves more than 9 million veterans at 1,255 healthcare facilities across the country. During the coronavirus pandemic, they've been working to implement a public health plan to care for veterans and others. Robert Wilkie is the U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Welcome back to the Confluence.
Well, thank you for having me.
In early April, the VA issued a huge COVID-19 response plan. Has that plan been effective, considering in the first week of May, deaths at VA hospitals jumped by as much as 80%?
Well, I think it has been, and then let's look at those numbers that you're talking about. We have had 611 veterans pass away in our facilities. We've had about 9,000 veterans contract COVID, and of those 9,000, more than 6,300 have recovered. The measures that we put in place, I think, have worked, and I'll give you an example. We have 134 nursing homes in VA, almost 8,000 patients. All of them have been tested. Right now, we have 21 nursing home patients across the country who have the virus.
Right. Mr. Secretary, what guidance and support have you been able to offer regional offices, including Pittsburgh, during this time?
So we gave them very clear instructions at the beginning. We cut off visitors to our hospitals. We screened everyone who came in. We cut off visitors to our nursing homes, and we cut out elective surgery. So what did that do? It allowed us to stop the wear and tear on our people and equipment. And they've been following that ever since. And we've had some very good results in the face of this terrible crisis. In Pittsburgh, the impact on our veterans has not been what we originally expected to have. Right now, there are three patients in the Pittsburgh VA who have the virus. Thankfully, 26 veterans in the Pittsburgh area have completely recovered, and there are 37 that we are following right now.
Do you have enough medical staff to care for patients, whether it's in Pittsburgh or across the country?
So in the last 4 weeks, we've hired 10,000 personnel. Over 3,000 of those are nurses, several hundred doctors. And just look at the state of Pennsylvania. In western Pennsylvania, where you are, the impact has not been great on veterans, and we've been able to move resources to other parts of the Commonwealth where they are needed, particularly in the Philadelphia area. And that's part of our process in terms of meeting the needs where those needs are.
Like other hospitals, the VA has been forced to ration personal protective equipment during the pandemic. In April, nurses and some union officials at some VA hospitals began raising concerns, even protesting about a lack of protective gear. Is the VA still experiencing gaps in the needed PPE?
Well, we're not. I mean, we have never run out of any protective equipment at any hospital in the system.
But you were cleaning or reusing PPE, correct?
In some places. So let me tell you what has happened in the country. For the first time, VA is now part of a national effort where equipment is being distributed across the country. And one of the things I did was I made sure that those who are in the emergency rooms, in the COVID wards, and who are on the front lines, they had protective equipment. Was I able to give people who had no contact with patients three changes of protective equipment a day? No. That just didn't make any sense. I would also note to the unions that we have the lowest employee infection rates of any healthcare system, I will say, in the world. In Italy, one quarter of those who contracted the virus were healthcare professionals. In almost every medical system in the eastern United States, the infection rate for employees is between 2 and 15%. We're somewhere around half of 1%. So we have gone that extra mile to protect our employees who are on the front line. Is it optimal in not being able to give those who are not dealing with patients extra equipment? No, it's not optimal.
VA Secretary Wilkie, Is the VA participating in any vaccine or treatment research?
Well, we certainly have, in the sense that we have talked to HHS. We have opened up our research arrangements with some of the major universities in the country. In fact, right up the road from you, the University of Pittsburgh. I think actually the University of Pittsburgh is the fourth highest recipient of research grants from VA. These relationships that we have, like at Pitt, we've instructed them to work with HHS to create a federal Manhattan Project when it comes to researching the prospect of having a vaccine ready for the country.
In Pittsburgh, there's been a lot of talk of rescheduled or postponed in-person appointments. Do you anticipate a backlog as in-person appointments are able to resume in the coming weeks?
Well, we are starting to plan for that, and it's posted on our website on reopening, not reopening, but returning to normal our VA facilities. Now, we haven't stopped cardiology appointments. We haven't stopped cancer treatments. We haven't stopped dialysis. We have stopped the normal wellness visits just to protect our veterans and also protect our employees. So we will be... In fact, we've already started in some places in the country, contacting veterans to reschedule.
How do you triage which appointments just can't wait? In other words, who gets priority?
If you have a heart condition, if you have cancer treatment, if you need dialysis, the process of you interacting with VA has never changed. We continue to do those things.
How glad are you that telehealth options were up and running in advance of all this?
I am very pleased, and we've been able to stress the system. On a normal month, we have about 40,000 mental health teleappointments. In the month of March, we had 154,000. We are reaching veterans in ways that we've never reached them. And in fact, in our general telehealth appointments, we've gone from 1 million to 2 million just in the space of 1 month.
Mental health seems to be at the top of mind for area vets, also food supports and housing. What role do you hope the VA is playing in veterans' lives during this crisis in food and housing?
Yeah, certainly we have increased our funding for the homeless programs. I think we received an extra $300 million in the emergency supplemental. I've been to the transitional housing for homeless veterans in Pittsburgh. That is fully staffed and operating, as well as our outreach in the greater Pittsburgh area. So we're very happy with those programs. And then we are working with the Congress to, and certainly Congressman Lamb, we are working with the Congress to expand the reach of our grant-making programs so that charities in the Pittsburgh area, charities that have contact with homeless and veterans in a way that we don't, can use those funds to expand their outreach to veterans.
Has the VA been able to offer additional supports for people with PTSD during the shelter in place?
Sure. That deals with our outreach both to veterans and to their families and caregivers, as well as our expansion of mental health, telehealth. We've distributed tens of thousands of computer tablets across the country. We have given explicit instructions through our medical providers to their patients who have not only mental health issues, but PTSD issues. That's a subset of that. And we've been pretty effective in getting the word out, and we see that in our numbers of telehealth appointments that we've been able to keep and make in this crisis.
Robert Wilkie is the U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, and good luck to the people in Pittsburgh.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Oil and gas companies in Pennsylvania could benefit from a change to a Federal Reserve stimulus program aimed at helping businesses during the coronavirus pandemic. Some are calling these changes a stealth bailout for the oil and gas industry and question whether they make sense from an environmental or economic standpoint. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
When it first rolled out its Main Street Lending Program, the Federal Reserve prohibited companies from using the loans to pay off debts. The loans were intended to help small and mid-sized companies from going under during the pandemic. But oil and gas companies and their advocates asked the central bank to loosen up those guidelines. They wanted to use the money to be able to pay off debt, too. The Fed's rule change, announced in late April, allowed just that. In a recorded statement, U.S. Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota said the changes will help American oil companies. He says they've been hurt by coronavirus and the oversupply of oil from the Saudi-Russian price war.
It's created a valley, and we need a bridge to the other side of that valley for these highly leveraged companies. And this will be one of those tools, I think, that will help build that bridge.
Oil drillers in Cramer's home state and other states like Texas stand to benefit the most from changes to the $600 billion loan program, which was part of the CARES Act, the $2 trillion coronavirus relief bill passed by Congress in March. The loans could also help natural gas companies that operate in Pennsylvania. The CEO of Range Resources was among those that lobbied the Fed for the rule changes. So did Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Guy Reschenthaler. On a video call organized by Cabot Oil and Gas, Reschenthaler praised the relaxed restrictions.
I do believe that as we recover from this pandemic, we've got to do something to make sure that we maintain our supply chain of energy.
But some have criticized the Fed's changes. Environmentalists question whether the government should be throwing a lifeline to the fossil fuel industry, one of the country's biggest sources of greenhouse gases. Graham Steele of the Stanford School of Business and a former Democratic congressional staffer says the changes could help companies that were doing poorly before the pandemic. And he says that's not what the CARES Act is for.
This is an oil bailout for a specific set of companies.
The Federal Reserve says changes to the program weren't made with the oil industry in mind, and that other industries could benefit too. Business groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce also lobbied for the changes. But Steele says the big winner here is oil and gas.
It structured the program in a way so as not to lose taxpayers' money. And now members of Congress and industry have lobbied them, and under that pressure, they have buckled, they have changed the program.
David Livingston with the Eurasia Group, a risk management firm, says allowing companies to use the loans to essentially refinance higher interest debts will help oil and gas companies. He says they've had to borrow because revenues from oil and gas alone have not been enough for them to cover their costs.
They were sort of running on a treadmill, and the entire shale enterprise was increasing its production month over month, year over year, in large part thanks to the continued provision of relatively low-cost capital.
The idea was that prices would eventually rise and they'd cash in. But the opposite has happened, at least for oil. The crash in oil prices has actually increased the price of natural gas. Since oil wells also produce natural gas, when oil production slows, less natural gas comes onto the market and the price for natural gas goes up. That's been good for shale gas companies in Appalachia. But Bill Holland, who covers the natural gas industry for S&P Global Platts, says some of these companies are still paying off debts they accumulated leasing millions of acres of land during the fracking boom.
Companies spent big to lease big tracts of land in western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, in the Utica and Marcellus shales. They grabbed that land, the land grab we called it, and that debt's still on their books.
One company that could benefit from the Fed's new loan program, Holland says, is Chesapeake Energy, which has a big loan payment coming due this year. But it's unclear whether Chesapeake could even qualify for the loan. News outlets are reporting the company is getting ready to file for bankruptcy. Reed Frazier, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Some businesses are reopening this weekend as Governor Tom Wolf loosens restrictions in Allegheny County and more rural parts of the state. That means people who were laid off due to the coronavirus are being told to return to work. Among them are people living with a wide range of health problems that put them at higher risk of getting sick and dying from COVID-19. WITF's Brett Schultes reports they face a choice, risk losing their jobs or their lives.
Dr. Fouad Ismail specializes in the immune system, but these days he's also getting to be an expert in helping people with serious concerns about whether it's safe to return to work.
The problem is there's certain fields where people aren't allowed to work from home and it's necessary to go into the office.
On the day we talked, he just got off the phone with a patient who has an autoimmune disorder that causes him to easily catch illnesses and makes it hard to fight them off. With businesses reopening, Ishmael's patient will be expected to return to work.
He's on a number of very expensive medications, and so finances are always a big concern. I actually just called him today and had this discussion. What are we going to do when you go back to work? What are ways that you can do this safely? And in his setting, there's not really any other option. This is his only source of livelihood.
Ishmael works in Center County, one of the first 24 counties allowed to partially reopen under the governor's order. His patients include cancer survivors, people on chemotherapy, and those who are immunosuppressed due to drugs they take for common conditions like rheumatoid arthritis or irritable bowel syndrome.
And so it's very different from the typical things that we would consider disability, and it's a completely really different issue where these are people that may look fine on the outside, but if they get infected, this could just be fatal.
He says because COVID-19 is so new, doctors lack the typical treatments like vaccines and antivirals that increase the odds their patients will survive.
We really don't have any ammunition to fight this.
Even for his patients who don't work, there are concerns.
And so we have a number of family with either children that have immune deficiencies or a relative that has an immune deficiency. And there's a lot of concern on their part about bringing something home and transmitting it to someone that's susceptible.
Though some doctors like Ishmael say it's too soon for some people to return to their jobs, the state is moving forward with plans to open some businesses after growing outcry from Republicans, some business owners, and even protesters outside the state capitol. According to Jerry Alexiak, Secretary of the State Department of Labor and Industry, fear of getting the virus is not a valid reason to stay on unemployment compensation.
If they are called back to work and the work is there, then they are expected to go back.
While people with health problems are concerned about their safety, Alexiak and other officials in state government are worried about people gaming the unemployment system. They say due to federal stimulus money, some people find they're earning more while unemployed than at their jobs. Unemployment Compensation Director Susan Dickinson mentions such a scenario when asked about people staying home due to fear of COVID-19.
If part of the reason why they're not going back is because they have a compromised immune system or someone in their house has a compromised immune system, you know, we would look at that as more of a relevant reason other than they're just making more money on unemployment or some other reason.
However, the department is declining to provide specific guidelines for what conditions, if any, would exempt someone from returning to work during the pandemic. It also won't say whether the numerous common health conditions that are risk factors for COVID-19 would be among the relevant reasons Dickinson alluded to. Those conditions include things like diabetes, which affects 1.4 million Pennsylvanians, high blood pressure, which affects almost half of all adults, and heart disease, the leading cause of death in the state. For those who don't return to work, Labor and Industry says there's no rule stopping an employer from firing them, a move that may boot the worker off unemployment compensation.
We can do so much with testing. We can only do so much with oversight.
The Wolf administration has ordered employers to safeguard their workers by providing personal protective equipment and mandating proper social distancing. However, workers say those rules aren't being followed, and Governor Wolf has admitted the order can't be widely enforced. Wolf said workers whose complaints are ignored have one big option.
They have the ultimate sanction, which is just to say, well, then I'm not coming to work.
For 62-year-old Joyce Veneta, it's a tough problem and one that has no easy long-term solution.
I noticed that I was getting pretty much chronic bronchitis, and then chronic bronchitis and or chronic pneumonia.
Veneta is one of Dr. Ishmael's patients. She's a registered nurse at a nursing home who up until this year was on medication that kept her immune disorder in check.
However, they changed my health insurance the first of this year, and they will not cover it. And so now I've gone without it since December, and now I've just recently recovered what went from a cold into bronchitis into pneumonia.
The irony is that illness, which according to a test was not COVID-19, is what kept Veneta off work right as the coronavirus ripped across Pennsylvania. She's been on unpaid leave and is on unemployment, though she hasn't seen any money yet. And now Vineda fears she may have few safe career options left.
I'm going to lose my job. Do I take care of my health or do I go back to work and help, you know, pay for the bills that continue to pile on?
At Dr. Ishmael's office, he says Vineda's situation shows there may be some long-term issues with people returning to work. But now is a particularly high-risk time because the coronavirus is present in the community, but treatments have not yet been developed. He says he knows businesses can't stay closed forever, but...
You have to earn a living. But you need to balance that with the potential of a virus that really doesn't care what we want to do. It's going to spread, unfortunately.
And with businesses in more counties expected to reopen Friday and some counties planning to defy the governor's shutdown order, finding that balance is going to be more important than ever. In Harrisburg, I'm Brett Schultes.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.